Commander Zahn.
Yes.
I have your chant for my father today.
Oh.
Maybe we can learn.
Le'ilu Neshama.
Yitzchak ben Shalom.
Yitzchak ben Shalom. For Le'ilu Neshama. Great. So you may have noticed, I don't know if you saw, that the subject of today's shiur would be what we call Shatchanis Gelt. And some of the issues that I want to discuss with you revolve around the basis for the obligation to pay Shatchanis Gelt. Sometimes you make up with the Shatchan in advance and it's less problematic, but sometimes a person offers his own services, sort of, as a shadchan, and if the shidduch goes through, the halacha requires that you pay dmei shadchanut, and the question is why? What's the basis for that? So the background to this discussion is what we call a sarsur in the Lashon HaShas. Otherwise, in our modern Hebrew, it's called a mitavech, dmei tivuch, which means an agent, someone who plays the role of an agent. And a mitavech, according to halacha, has a right to demand payment for his services. And that you'll see on the first source of your page, which is a Gemara in Baba Basra on Daf Pei Zayin. The Gemara says that im haya sarsur b'neihem, nishbara achavis, nishbara lasarsur. What is that all about? So Rashi explains what the essence of a sarsur is. And Rashi says, liknos mibalabayis, he purchases something from the owner, umocher lacherim, and he sells it to someone else, he's the middleman, umarviach, meaning he raises the price. So he bought it at 10, and he sells it at 12. He's the mitavech between the buyer and the seller, meaning instead of the seller finding the buyer directly, the sarsur plays the role as a middleman, and for that service that he offers, that he provides, he deserves to be paid what we call dmei tivuch, a certain agency's fee, and he takes his fee of tivuch by raising the price of the object that was being sold from the seller to the buyer. And the Shulchan Aruch dedicates an entire siman in Choshen Mishpat, Siman Kuf Pei Hei, 185, to this subject. And just to give you an idea of how much, if you take a look in that siman on Kuf Pei Hei, you'll see how much ink has been spilled on this topic, on this subject. In fact, if you take a look in the Ramah in Sif Yud says the following. He writes, Hashadchan Havi Kemo Sirsur. He writes that the shadchan must be paid, and he has rights to be paid, just like a sarsur has the rights to be paid. And he writes that im hashadchan rotze shishamlo miyad sar shadchanuso toli b'minig ha-medina. Okay, we'll get to this. This is, I'm jumping ahead of myself, but the Ramah is going to ask at what point in time does the shadchan have to be paid? Does he have a right to demand payment? But in any event, we see clearly from the presentation here, the Ramah, in the broader context of the mitavech, of the sarsur, that the shadchan is a classical case of a sarsur, and therefore he has rights to be paid for his services. Now, the big hakira that we want to raise in the whole shiur today is going to focus around this question, and we'll see its ramifications, is under what law, under what category, does the shadchan have rights to demand payment? There are two possible categories, or halachic fundamental rules. One is the rule that applies to a poel, which means that if I hire you for a certain job, I pay you for your service, for your job. However, that's not going to help us in all cases of shadchanus. It might help us if you arrange with a shadchan up front. In other words, you or your wife took the initiative to call up a shadchan and say, I need a shidduch for my son, for my daughter. Then perhaps the law of Poel should apply. But let's say the shadchan was not approached by the father or the mother. He took the initiative on his own. The law of Poel is not going to apply, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have rights to be paid. He definitely does have rights to be paid. But that's under an entirely different category. Not the category of a Poel, but rather the category of Yored L'Tov Sada Shal Chavero, Yored L'Tov Sada Shal Chavero V'Nata Shalo Bershuso. You own a field, and on my own initiative, without you hiring and contracting with me, I planted your field. And you and I would have said, well, go fly a kite. I mean, I didn't ask you to do so, but the halacha is not like that. The halacha, as we'll soon see, requires that we be that such a person, that yored, even though shalom b'shus, should be paid for his services. How much exactly he should be paid, that's going to be the subject of the sugyan bab mitzia, which you'll see here in the middle of your page, in Ashoel Sapar of Daf Kuf Aleph. But before we see that, let's just summarize what we're saying. It's true that a shadchan has a right to demand payment, as we see in Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat Siman Kuf Pehe, but exactly on what basis, and therefore the ramifications, exactly how much money he could demand in payment, is a matter of question. Is he being paid as a poel? Which again, if he's hired, if he's been actively, if his services were actively sought out, and we asked the shadchan to please suggest the shidduch, then he could be considered a poel. However, in the case of a shadchan who on his own initiative decided to call you up with a suggestion, in such a case, the monies that have to be paid cannot be considered under the law of Poel, but rather under the law of Yored L'Sada Shal Chaver V'Nata Shalom Bershus. And the one who actually points this out explicitly is the Vilna Gaon. And it's a little bit strange that the Vilna Gaon doesn't appear here in Kuf Pei Hei, that's what we would have anticipated, but rather he appears in Simon Pei Zion. So if you take a look on the top of your page 2, you'll see that the Choshen Mishpat in Pei Zayin speaks about other inyanim that aren't relevant really to us at all. But the Rambam adds a comment there in Simon Pei Zayin, in which he writes, Tavo Bischar Shadchanus, and he writes that in a case of a shadchan, and he demands payment, v'zeh kofar, and the defendant in this case denies it, v'yomer shaloh yashadchin shaloh, and he says, look, you aren't working on my behalf, I didn't ask you to do this shadchanis, is dino kibishar tvios mamon. And we're not sure what the Ramon means, kibishar tvias mamon. So on that, we have a comment here of the Gaon, of the Vilna Gaon, and he writes that Din Hashadchanus Humidin Hayored Litoch Sada Shal Chaver Shalom Bershuso, and the law is, as we'll soon see, Bab Mitzia on Daf Kuf Aleph, that Im Haisa Hasada Asuya Lita, if this Sada was really waiting to be planted. In other words, it's a plantable field, and there's no reason whatsoever why it shouldn't be planted, as opposed to other cases where you want to leave the field, you know, there's a deliberate reason why you want to leave the field near, which means leave it bura, that without planting. But assuming it's omed lita, is omdim. We evaluate how much a person would pay for someone who offered that service of planting the field, and that's where the Gaon refers us to Bab Metzia Kuf Aleph, which we'll see. But he adds one more line here. He says, "For who kamo sarsur b'simon kuf pehe." He says that this shadchan, even though he offered his services on his own initiative, nobody gave him a buzz and nobody requested of him, and certainly he wasn't hired as a poel, nevertheless, he comes under this concept which the Rabbah calls Shar Dine Tvias Maman. Says the Gaon, it means it comes under the law of Hayored Litov Sada Shal Chavero Venata Shalom Bershus. So without further ado, let's take a look at the Gemara in Asocher in Asholas Apara. The Gemara says, "Hayored Itmar, Hayored Litov Sada Shal Chavero Venata Shalom Bershus." Omer Rav, Shomin Lo V'Yodo Ala Tachtona. It means that we have to evaluate how much money we have to pay this person, but it's going to always be in favor. Whatever the issue is going to be, we're going to tilt the scale in favor of the payer, in other words, the owner of the field, and to the detriment of the yored. What does that mean? So Shmuel says, "Omdim kamadav rotza liton besada zulinota." First of all, we have to evaluate how much would a person be willing to pay for a worker to work the field. And Rav Papa says that that's not against Rav. It wasn't that Shmuel was denying Rav, but rather lo pligi kan besada suyalita kan besada she'ena asuya Lita. Rashi says, Ilanos, that's a Soda Suya Lintoa, is Ilanos, Sheyafal Ilan Yoser, Mizraim. And that's what Shmuel says, that we evaluate how much a person would be willing to pay for that service. What does Rav mean when he says, Yodo Ala Tachtona? Rav addresses the following issue. There are two elements here that have to be decided, that have to be addressed. One is called Shvach, and the other is called Hotzah, or Yitzia, the expenditure. So there's the Shvach, which means the appreciation of the field as a result of this service. It's now worth more in the market. And the other is Yitzia, or Hotzah, which means the amount of money, the expenditure that was spent by the yored, by the person who went down and did this work. You know, he paid for this, he paid for that, he spent money for this, he spent money for that. So Rashi says that if the shvach is more than the hotzah, then yodo al tachtona means he gets the lesser of the two, and he's paid the hotzah, because the shvach is greater than the hotzah. But if the hotzah was yisera al shvach, then the yored cannot claim he wants to be compensated for all his losses, but rather he gets paid for the shvach. So shvach and yitzia become the ceiling, the maximum amount of money he can demand in the case of a soda she'ena suya lita. That's the case which Rav Papa says Rav was addressing, in which case the yore gets the lower of the two, whether it's shvach or yitzia. That's called yodo ala tachtona. However, Shmuel is addressing a situation of a sode hasuya lita, and in that case we simply evaluate how much it would be worth for him to pay a worker to do what has to be done, in this case to plant the field. And getting back to the Gaon, what we saw in the Vilna Gaon, it seems that paying a shadchan comes under the halacha of sada hasuya lita, and therefore we have to pay the shadchan whatever a person would normally, we'll have to see exactly how that works, how do you evaluate it, but whatever normally a person would be able to be paid for Shadchanis, if he was hired up front. So again, we're talking about a case where a Shadchan was Matzia Me'atzmo, he suggested the Shidduch on his own, and yet there's a Chiv Tashlumin to pay him, says the Gaon, under the Halacha of Notei HaSodah Shel Chaver Shlomi Daito, and it means you got to pay him, as Shmuel said, the full price, Omdim Kama Demrotza Liten, how much a person would normally pay for this service, because we're talking about a Soda Suyalita. In other words, if a young man or young woman are old enough to be in Shidduchim, as we say, to get married, or to use a common phrase that they use here in Yiddish, he is in the market for Shidduchim. You know, they say he's in Shidduchim. That's sort of like a translation for the Yiddish. He says that in such a case, he becomes a Soda Hasuyalita, and therefore we have to make this Umdana, we have to somehow evaluate how much a person would pay for such a service. And basically, there's a fundamental difference here between a Poel, meaning when I hire a Shadchan, and a Shadchan who did this on his own initiative. If I hire a Shadchan who becomes a Poel, then there is an absolute standard for the work. How much is the work worth? In other words, we evaluate the Pa'ula. If, on the other hand, the Shadchan took the initiative on his own, or on his own, he calls you up and says, "Wow, I have a great suggestion for your son or for your daughter," then as a Yored Latov Sadeh Shechaver, you have to pay him not for the Pa'ula itself, but rather for the Hana, for the benefit that you received from this Pa'ula. Now again, at this point, that sounds like a very abstract distinction. What's the difference between paying for the Pa'ula itself or paying for the Hana from the Pa'ula? But we'll soon see that there is a major nafkamina between the two, and that nafkamina, that difference is going to play in on the difference between a self-appointed Shadchan who offered the Shidduch on his own initiative, as opposed to a Shadchan who was called up, he was tapped on the back and asked for his Shadchanis. Just give me one last second then, just to finish the whole paragraph. Mamish, 1 minute. The Ramah that we saw in Kuf Pei Hei says that paying for Shadchanis depends upon Minag HaMedina. So the concept here to determine how much money a Shadchan has the right to demand, says the Ramah, that Umdana, which we saw in the case of Yorei L'Tov Sada Shal Chavero V'Nata Shalom Bershus, and Shmuel says that since it's a Sada Suyolita, therefore you make an Umdana how much a person would pay for that, says the Ramah, in the case of Shadchanis, since there's a going rate, which he calls Minag HaMedina, that's the way we do this Umdana, how much we should be paying for the service that was offered by the Shadchan on his own initiative. Yeah, Dan.
I don't see the comparison with the Sadeh at all, because here the Shadchan is declaring his intention. The one who works the Sadeh doesn't come and say, "I'm going to work your field tomorrow, so I have a chance to stop him or object or something." Here, if I don't want the Shidduch, I can say, "Go away, I'm not interested." But no, I accept the resume, I go on and check it. So it's never a situation like the Sadeh.
No, but you have to understand the following. Let's say you didn't accept the Shadchan. You know, you didn't say to the Shadchan, "Look, I'm very happy, you know, that you offered this suggestion, because I would have actually called you up in any event. You know, I definitely need your Shadchanis." What happened was, the Shadchan called you up and said, "You know, there's a lovely young man for your daughter. His name is so-and-so." And then He hangs up the phone. That's where the conversation begins and ends. So you never actually accepted him as your shadchan. Please be my shadchan. Yo, thank you very much. You're right, Dan. If you went ahead and you accepted him as a shadchan, then that's like the case where the Baal HaSada comes down to his field. He sees this guy planting. He says, you know what? Why should I hire anybody else? I already have you. And in effect, that makes him into a poet. And the same thing would apply to shadchan, and you point that out very well. If I say to the shadchan, great, you know, I needed a shadchan badly, and you're doing a great job by coming up with a suggestion, I appreciate that, then basically I'm hiring him as a poel. But if on the other hand, he calls me up and he says, here's a great idea for you, and he tells me about something, somebody, you know, Yitzchak ben Avram that I never knew about, and I go ahead on that initiative and I organize the shidduch, then in such a case, he's a yored l'tosad shel chaver. I'm benefiting tremendously from what he did. Again, the question is going to be, if we get a chance to get into this, and this is the most important question, who's getting a benefit here? Is it the father? Is it the mother? Is it the child herself or himself? So give me just a few minutes, you know, to present some of the issues to you so that we get our feet grounded. Because so far we've just sort of touched the tip of the iceberg. In any event, the laws of shadchanis that are codified here in the Ramah are not mentioned by the Shulchan Aruch. And the strange thing is, why did the Mechaber himself omit mention of this very common situation in our life? And there's a sefer here which you'll see on page 7 called the Tshuvas van Hagos, and he claims, which is very fascinating to me, that the Sfaradim to this very day did not have this halacha, this minog of paying dmei shadchanos. It's an Ashkenazi thing. So if there are any Sfaradim that you know of who want to hide behind the omission of the Mechaber and they want to implement the minhag of the Sfaradim, they could claim, I don't want to pay shadchanis. Again, unless you actually hire a shadchan, that's of course a poem. Okay, now we want to study the following. What's the nafkamina between paying shadchanis as a poel, because I hired him, and paying shadchanis as a yored l'tol sodesh al chavero, where he, the shadchan, took the initiative? What's the nafkamin? So we want to suggest three different nafkaminas. The first nafkamina is, and this is critical, at what point does the shadchan have a right, at what moment in time does the shadchan have a right to demand payment? And at what point do I become obligated to pay? What do you say, David? Oh, so if it's a shadchan who took the initiative and he was not appointed as your shadchan, or you didn't request him to fill that role, but rather he took the initiative on himself, that's called a yored l'tosad shel chavero shelo bershus, and the mechayev is not the pe'ula, but the hana, the benefit itself. So if you take a look at the Tshuvas HaDeshen, which you'll see on the bottom of your page 1, he says the following. He writes that Ein nogim begvuleinu ligvol shum schar shadchanis elim kein gamru hanesuin. As you said, David, that he can only demand payment for shadchanis after the marriage. Now, at this point, it sounds like no one's going to question that. The Tshuvas HaDeshen was one of the great early Ashkenazim poskim, you know, from 6 centuries ago. But in one of the contemporary poskim, from the Karlita Rosh Hashiva. His name is Rabbi Yisrael Grossman, and he wrote a book called Halichos Yisrael, which you'll see on page 6. He writes that although it's true that if the Shadchan on his own initiative suggested the Shidduch, then you don't have to pay him under the law of Yorei Letzoch Sodah Shel Chavero for the Netiyah itself, meaning the efforts that he put in, but rather you pay him for the Hanah that he gave you, that he did for you. And what is the Hanah that he did for you? In the case of Shidduchim, that's the Nisuin itself, that's the marriage. And therefore, the Trumas Hadeshen in such a scenario is absolutely correct, that there's no chiv to pay Tashlumin until after the Nisuin, after the Chopah. But that's only in the case where the Shadchan took his initiative. However, he says that in our time, if you employ a Shadchan, and again, I don't mean that you signed a contract with the Shadchan, but the Tzadim sent a message to the Shadchan, or called him up and said, I need you to help me out here, and suggest a Shidduch for my son, for my daughter, then you have to pay him as a Poel. And if you're paying him as a Poel, because you asked him to be a Shadchan, then you have to pay him when he finishes his Pa'ula. And his Pa'ula, says the Halichos Yisrael, completes itself with the Tnayim, way, way, way before the Nisuin. Why? Because he says when you're paying a Poel, then you're paying him for his effort, and all his efforts begin, let's call it time T1 and end at time T2. What is time T1 and time T2? T1 is when he calls you up and you say to him, please, or you call him up and please serve as in the capacity as my Shadchan, and he suggests a Shidduch. And time T2 is when that Shidduch really is complete, and the Shidduch is cemented with an engagement, I guess you'd call it. Halachically, it's called a Tnayim. He says that Od Lifnei HaNisuin Kipoel Kipoel HaSashidduch Chayav B'Tashlum B'Zman HaTnayim. And then he wants to ask another question. What happens if, heaven forbid, after the Tnayim they break the engagement? This Batel HaShidduch, and he writes that in such a case, if the Shadchan was paid as he should be paid after the Tnayim, Ein HaShadchan Chayav Lahachzer Tmei HaShadchanis Af Al Gav Din Is Batel HaShidduch Masha'en Kein Be Shidduch Shechayav HaTashlum Hurakli Achar Nisuin Kigon Shashadchan Hitzias HaShidduch Me'atzmo. And in such a case you pay for the Hanah. Well, the Hanah is not in the Tnayim, but rather in the Nisuin. In this battle, HaShidduch Li'achar HaTnayim Lifnei HaNisuin Poshet Hu She'ein HaShadchan Notel Me'uma. So let's say, for example, somebody suggests the Shidduch, and then the Shidduch works out at stage one, and they have Tnayim. You paid the Shadchan, and then this Batel HaShidduch, he has to give back the money. Why? Because you're only paying him for the Hanah that you got, and in this case, there was no Hanah, because this Batel HaShidduch before the Nisuin. But if on the other hand, you hired him for a Shadchan, he did his job. What happens after his job was complete, like let's say for example, you know, a man planted my field because I asked him to plant my field. He was hired as a poel. Now all of a sudden after he completes his job, there's a tornado or an earthquake or a downpour of rain that ruins it. That's my fault. That's called Mazle Goren. That's already my bad luck that caused it. He did his pa'ula. He was hired as such. I have to pay him as a poel. So that's nafkamina number one between a shadchan that was asked to be a poel, and a shadchan who took his own initiative, you never hired him, you have to pay him as a yorid l'tom sadash chavero. The first case, you have to pay him with the gmar pa'ula, which is considered at the time the tnoim. In the second case, you don't have to pay him till lahana, which is the nesuin.
I would say in the second case...
Speak a drop louder, if you don't mind.
Sorry?
Just a drop louder, if you don't mind.
Sorry, where the guy does it on his own, the shadchan does it on his own, I'll tell you there's a hana also, in a strange sense, because assuming that you want children to marry in order, right? Some people actually have that hakpada. You want the children to marry in order, not out
in their order of their age.
So then when the first one gets engaged, I'll say, okay, now the second one can start dating. So there's a shtickle hana as well.
Okay,
even if it breaks up later.
So that, again, would depend upon minhag ha-medina. Meaning, David, if, let's say, the shadchan has a leg to stand on, that the generally accepted custom is to pay for the fact that the second son or daughter was able to start in shidduchim because of the first shidduch, then ein hachinami. But again, it's not going to be the same payment. The hanah is certainly not comparable to the hanah of marrying off a child, take him into the chuppah. Now we're up to nafkamina number two. This is the Iser Doraisa of Baal Tolin, which means if you don't pay your workers on time, the Torah says, Biyomo Titein Scharo, that with the completion of his work on that very day you pay him, and the Torah says, Lo Tolin Schar Pula, you're not allowed to delay it. If somebody is Ma'akev, he delays payment of Dmei Shadchanis. So you'll see again in Alichas Yisrael, on page 6, he says once again, the nafkamina is whether you pay him as a poel or as a yored l'tosad shal havera. Did you ask him to play the role as a shadchan, or he did so and offered it on his own? If he offered it on his own, and the chiv tashlumin is for the hana, which is called yored l'tosad shal havera, that's called a chov. A chov means, if I borrow money from you, I have to pay you. If I purchase something from you and I haven't paid you yet, that's called a debt. That's a chov. If I damage your property and I owe you compensation, that's called a chov. In all cases of a chov, that's a chiyuv. If I refuse to pay, Bezdin knows what to do. You know, the shibudim, and they can collect and confiscate. But there's no bal tolin. There's no biyomo titein schara. These two Essay and Los Essay apply specifically to a case of a poel. And therefore, since you're paying him as a yorid l'tosad shel havero, namely as what? As a hana, okay, you owe him a chov for that hana. But he was never a hired worker, and therefore there's no iser of bal tolin. So if you go down to my field, and you plant my field, I owe you a compensation for the hana that I benefited from your work, but I don't have to pay you as a poel, as a worker. And the nafkamina is that if I delay payment, you have an outstanding chov over me. You can sue me, obviously, in a Jewish court of law for that chov to pay you up, but I never violated those isurim. Masha Enkin, he says, in a case of a shadchan shenishlach al yidei, Al Yidei Ha'av, or Ha'em, or whatever, one of the tzadim or both tzadim, in such a case, the shadchan is being paid as a poel, and therefore, the payment has to come immediately, okay, let's say it's with the tnoim, whatever it is, and delayment of that payment incurs a violation of bal tolin. David?
I was going to say, it seems to me that the case of the shadchan is not exactly a poel in particular. It's more like a kabbalah, because you agree to perform something, you know, so sometime...
You're not being paid per hour, or...
Yeah, it's not paid per hour. It's like, why would you say it's a poel? Like, if a guy plants a field, it's okay, it takes me 8 hours to plant 10 acres, or some formula like that, right? The shadchan, it's all over the map. You make one phone call to seal a shidduch, or we're talking about phone calls.
So, David, I'm not learning Bat Metzia now. I don't know. I think in Daf Yomi they're learning Bat Metzia. If I remember correctly, again, please don't hold me liable for this. the law is that even a kablon is considered like a poel as far as Baal Tolin is concerned. Just that the only difference is, instead of paying him for a day's work, you pay him when the job is complete. But as soon as he completes the job, on that day itself, you have to pay him. Okay, again, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I'm not holding above Metzia. I don't even have a Gemara Metzia here in front of me, so I can't even... I know more or less where to look, but... Okay. What's the third nafkamina? The third nafkamina, which you'll see in the Pisrei Tshuva in Evin Ezer, which is on page 3. And here we're skipping from Choshei Mishpat to Evin Ezer. And you'll see on the bottom of your page 3 a long presentation of the Pisrei Tshuva. And the question is, what happens when we talk about Minagamakom, or Minagamedina? What happens to the two Makomos? What do I mean? Let's say, and this is quite common, that there's the Makom of the Mechutanim, and there's the Makom of the Shadchan. Meaning, the parents of the Chassan or the Kal live in Medina X, and the Shadchan lives in Medina Y. And in each Medina, there's a different minog as to how much you pay for Shadchanis. In one Medina, they pay 1,000. In another Medina, they pay 2,000 or more. So, because Echem Emekobos Nog L'Shalim Schum Acher, a different Schum of Dmei Shadchanis, and the Pisrei Tshuva wants to know, and he quotes the Parim Meiros and other Tshuvas, how much do the Mechutanim have to pay? Does the Shadchan have the upper hand, and he has the right to demand the higher payment? Because basically he's now working on behalf of the Mechutanim. Or no, on the contrary, it's the Mechutanim have a right to have the upper hand because they're getting the Hanah. So if you take a look in a sefer called Mishpatei HaTorah, which is on page 9, he also has a long discussion about this. We're not going to have time to do it now, but I'll just mention one factor here. When you pay for the Hanah, what basically you're paying for is what I would have had to have spent for this guy to, or any guy to, plant my field. So if I could have had a Shadchan at a lower price, then I have a right to say to the Shadchan, look, I don't have to pay you your fees based on your Medina, because in my Medina I could have gotten away with paying a lower price. That's clear. The only complication is going to be if, let's say, the Mechutanim live in a Medina where they pay a higher price. And once again, if we're talking about a Yorid L'Tosod Shel Chavero as a Hana, then it could very, very possibly be that the Shadchan has the right to say, look, even though in my Medina I would have gotten paid less, but you have to pay me what you saved, the service that I provided for you in terms of the Hana that you got. And that Hana could be reflected by your Minag HaMedina, which is higher than my Minag HaMedina. All that is relevant in the case of a Shadchan who took it upon himself on his own initiative to suggest the Shidduch. He's not being paid as a poel, he's being paid for his Hanah. If on the other hand you ask the Shadchan, then you are hiring him as a poel. And once again, the question is, does the poel have a right to say, well, where I come from, you pay more of a poel? And that's absolutely not true. Because when I hire you as a poel, I hire you on the given going rate here, where you're doing the work. The fact that you come, you know, you cross the border as a legal or illegal immigrant, and you want to work for me based on what they pay in Mexico, I don't know where you came from, that's totally, totally irrelevant. So again, the Shadchan may have a claim in the case of a higher Shadchanis in one Medina, that's if you're paying him for the Hanah. But if you're paying him as a poel, then clearly That's determined by the makom of the mechutan. And this leads me to the last major part of this discussion, and that's the tshuva of the Avnei Nezer, the Sukkot Shalom. The Sukkot Shalom wants to know who exactly is obligated to pay the Shadchan. For example, one could argue that the Chiyuv Shadchanis is incumbent upon the Chasan and the Kala, maybe both. One could argue that the Chiyuv is incumbent upon the parents, the Mechutanim. And he says the following. He writes, and this you'll see on page 5, Zeh Pashut, Shechiv Shadchanis Chal Al HaChasan VeHakala, Ki Lahem Asa HaTova. Who is doing this service? Who's providing the service? For whom is this service being done? And he says the answer is that it's being done on behalf of the Chas and the Kal, then the ones who are benefiting from the Shadchanis. Rak Shah Mechutanim Mishalmim Avuram. If the Mechutanim pay, they're paying on behalf of the Chas and Kal. And therefore he says that supposing the children, the Chas and the Kal, have no money in the bank, Ein Gam Chiyuv Tashlum De Shadchanis Al HaHorim, then the parents don't have to pay. Kigon, he says that in the case of the Avnei Nezer, the Chasan and Kala had no chiyuv. We'll see exactly why, and therefore the horim, the parents, don't have to pay. Lamaisa, the Avnei Nezer writes that the mechutanim pay the dmei shadchanis on behalf of the Chasan and Kala, and he doesn't have any basis for that, because again, according to his shita, the chiyuv is really incumbent upon the chasan kal. Why should the shadchan have any rights whatsoever to demand payment from the mechutanim if the chiyuv is on the chasan kal? He has no source for that, unless he means that the minhag medina somehow is koveh. But in any event, let's say, for example, the Chas and Kala are orphans, Rachmana Litzlan, right? They have no parents. Then, of course, the Avnei Nezer says they, the Chasan and the Kala, have to pay Dmei Shadchanis, because fundamentally, the Chiyuv is incumbent upon them and not on the Mechutanim. And in this case, there are no Mechutanim, because they're both Yisomim. And B'kai Gavna, the Shadchan has a right to demand payment from the Chas and the Kala. Again, how that payment is going to be split up is a different issue. However, despite the tshuva of the Avnei Nezer, the later poskim rise up against the Avnei Nezer. And again, going back to the tshuva on page 6 of the Alichos Yisrael of the Slonima, he says that I reject the Avnei Nezer because the reason that there's a chiyuv tashlumin on the Bnei Azug, according to the Avnei Nezer, is because Lahem Asa HaTov, that the benefits are enjoyed by the Bnei Azug, by the Chas and the Kala. But he says, no, HaHorim Nasa Lahem Tova B'Gemar HaShiduch. They can't wipe their hands and say, well, we don't have to pay, we didn't get any benefit. No. HaInyan Shal HaShiduch Nogei Lahem B'Nafsham. This is very, very important. You know, a person has to marry off a son or a daughter who is probably davening for 3 times a day for that. It's nogelem benafsham. And therefore, chutz mi etzem adin sha'av chayv lahasiyas b'no obito, even regardless of the fact, I don't even have to come on to the fact that the father has an obligation to marry off his son or a daughter, the Torah and the mitzvah is incumbent upon him. But even regardless of that, he says he benefits from it. Hainu shahana nases lahorim, and therefore the din of yored l'sof sada shel aver applies, because the parents are getting hana. So if there's no, you know, if there's no way of collecting from the chasan kala, then the shadchan certainly has a right to collect from the from the Horeb. And he goes as far as to say, this is an amazing statement, Bechol HaTshuvos, I checked in all the tshuva literature. I don't know how anyone could say such a thing. Be'inyon Tzchar Shatchanus, Lo Ishtamutei Chad Minayu, I didn't find any single tshuva who says that the horim, that the parents, the mechutanim, yechol of lomel shatkan la bal dvarim didiyat, you have no right to collect and sue me for payment. Iyanti, he writes, for esros tshuvos, I looked at tens of tshuvos, specifically ashutim, ubekulam, in all, every single one of the tshuvos, hoya din Torah im ahorim, the claim was against the parents, velo im achasav akala. The harbei pa'amim, in many of the tshuvos, they went as far as to say, shahorim chayovim shmua, that if the horim claim they paid, and the shatkan says they never got paid, they have to take a shmua. K'mo shekosav ha'rabah b'simon pei zayin, again, if you look on the top of page 2, in simon pei zayin, the Rabah says that is going to be a tviyas schar for shatkanus, so explicitly with regard to Shadchanis, the Rabbah says it's going to be a Shmua. Who's taking the Shmua? The Shmua is being taken according to all the tshuvas that I saw, says the Slonova, by the parents, and therefore Lamaisa he paskins that the Tashlum Dvea Shadchanus, he says in terms of how much exactly the shatkan should be paid, kovea minog, the minog is the final determining factor, but havea horim, heim elu shechayovim meikra din l'shalim istvei hashadchons. So this business that the Sukkachover assumes that the chiyuv and the hanah is on the chasen and the kala, not on the parents, that is a matter of great controversy, and I'm understating it. And he says, "Hanidon who imchovas hatashlim shatchanus mitolos chosav kal ahorim who rak asher shatchan itzias hashkidush shidduch liatzmo." The subject of this debate, of this controversy between the Avnei Nezer and the Halichos Olam, is only relevant if the shatchan took the initiative to suggest the shidduch. However, if the shatchan was contracted, so to speak, by the parents, then for sure the parents have to pay. Az chiyuv hatashlumin whom he didn't poel. So this is a fourth nafkamina, at least according to Sukkachover, between the shatchan who was appointed as a shliach, as opposed to the shatchan sheitzias hashidduch mi'atzmo. Now, he says that even if I accept the position of the Avnei Nezer, that the Chiyuv Shatchanis Gelt is incumbent upon the Chosim Kal, if the Shatchan was contacted by the parents, then it comes under the halacha of Schorcha Aleinu. That Gemara I actually remember. That's a Gemara at the very beginning of Asochras HaPoalim, where the Baal Bayis tells so-and-so, go hire me workers, and I'm willing to pay them 3. And the so-and-so, this agent, the go-between, he tells the Poalim that they're going to be paid 4. So the halacha is that after they finish the job, and they find out the Baal Bayis is only willing to pay 3, they can collect that extra increment from 3 to 4 from the agent. That's called schar chalai. You know, come to me and I guarantee that you'll be paid. So here too, if the parents hire the shatchan, even if the Sukkachover is right that the chiyuv of the hanah is incumbent upon the chasam kala, in such a case the parents, by contacting the shatchan, are accepting upon themselves schar chalai, a lie, and therefore them a chuyav to pay the shadchan. Now, the next part of the shia, which I don't know if we'll have time for to go into detail today, is what happens if there were many different shadchanim. So let's say, for example, the first Shadchan suggested a young lady, and for whatever reason, they couldn't work it out. Let's say, for example, there was a debate about how much money should be offered to the young couple, and as a result of that debate, the whole thing fell apart. Then a second Shadchan comes along and suggests the same shidduch, but this time the second Shadchan was able, with great expertise, to work out a compromise, and as a result, the shidduch went through. So in a certain sense, there was Shadchan number one, and there was Shadchan number two. There are even cases where there are three Shadchanim. There's the Rishon, the Emtzai, and the Shlishi. Well, usually what happens in most cases of Shidduchim, the Shadchan already up front will give both Tzadim, the Chasim side and the Kalis side, the potential Chasim, a sense of, will we be able to participate financially in getting this marriage on its feet? So there is some initial discussion about that. And what often happens is that when the Shadchan, you know, calls you up and say, well, I have the following young man for your daughter, the only thing is that the parents are very hard-pressed for finances, and basically they're saying, well, you know, the ball is in your court as far as finances. Maybe we'll chip in a little bit for the wedding, but that's about all we can afford. And at that point, the other side just drops the idea, and it never really gets off the ground. Then, for whatever reason, sometimes because the situation gets a little bit more desperate, another Shadchan suggests the same shidduch, and at this point, the tzadim are willing to say, well, I know you can't chip in, we'll go for it anyway. So does the first Shadchan have any rights to collect Dmei Shadchanus if his Shadchanus never amounted to anything? And once again,
we said that the payment is only due after trial.
Oh, so again, this might be another nafkamina between the two categories. So that's what, again, I have a whole long discussion here with the Noda B'Yehuda, which you'll see on page 4, and the Pisrei Tshuva quotes the Noda B'Yehuda on page 2. So we'll try to get into that. The Pisrei Tshuva in Choshen Mishpat Siman Kuf Pei Hei Sivkat and Gimel quotes the Noda B'Yehuda. And in the Tshuva of the Noda B'Yehuda, he wants to make a distinction between a Shadchan and a Mitavich. A Mitavich, as we said before, is the go-between in a Mekach, in a cell, in which he buys at a lower price and sells the object, the merchandise, at a higher price. The Noda B'Yehuda writes, "Be'esek ha-mekach ein shom dvarim emtzayim, va'mekach talui rak bedonim. V'kevan shasarsur hevi osam li'emek ha-shoveh, v'lo nishar shum ikuv rak ha-kinyin, l'chein im hichnis biramois sarsur acher yesh listapek im zemachayves hamocher l'shalim l'rishon al b'shiduchim adom yedua sheyesh harbe protim v'af shenisratzu shnei atzdodim b'sach hanidon yesh harbe protim kvo ischayves mezonos v'dira lazug begodim matonis. Hadavar yadua shafilu kvar bo atzdodim yachad lifonim bishvil davar katan miod misparedes hachavila umispatel hashidduch lachein kol zman shelo hishva osam hashadchan harishon kol hapratim adayin lo nigmar hashidduch al yidei hashadchan ve'em lashadchan harishon kak taromes aval lo shum din umishpat klal. He sets up a contrast between mekach, between sel, and Shadchanus. In the case of Mekach, what happens is that the deal was already clinched based on the first Shadchan, the first Sarsur. He, as a Mitavech, was successful in getting the buyer and the seller together, but sometimes in order to cut him out, they introduce Beramos and another party, another Sarsur, so that the Kiyu, they don't want to have to pay the first Sarsur. And this is considered to be Ramos because we have no doubt that the deal was already clinched by the first Shadchan, if you will. But he says in the case, not of a mocher and a lokeach, but of shiduchim, there are so many myriads of details, and the shidduch could either stand or fall based on these details. Even if, as a result of the first shadchan, the two tzadim from the chas and the kal, they got together as far as the nedunya is concerned, meaning how much money will be brought in initially, but there are so many other issues, like mizonos, you know, the ongoing support for the couple, the apartment, who's going to pay for rental, you know, there can be issues about gifts that have to, you know, be given to the chasukala, and clothes that have to be bought for the chasukala. He says, the note that it's so common that even though at one point it seems like the tzadim got together and they reached an agreement, but nevertheless, for one little thing, he says, the whole shidduch can be blown up and fall apart. And therefore, until the very last moment, the shadchan arishon is not really considered halachically the shadchan. And therefore, if a second shadchan steps in and picks up where the first shadchan left off, and he's able to clinch the deal, and the shidduch goes through, he, the second shadchan, has rights to claim. The first shadchan, though, should be paid some amount of money. It's not clear exactly how much. But even if he's not paid, he doesn't have a leg to stand on in a Jewish court, he has what's called taromas, you know, he has complaints against the mechutanim because they didn't pay him at all for all the work that he put in. And taromas is halach on Erev Yom Kippur, you know, if you want the, you know, in order to achieve, you know, mechila and slicha bidei shamayim and kapara klap ishmai, you're going to have to pay something. Again, it's unclear to me exactly how much you pay the first shadchan. But that's not a strict legal claim that can be enforced in a court of law. That belongs more to the Chiyuv B'din Shamayim and the Halach of Taromis. And that's because it's the second Shadchan who really, with the Makom HaPatish, was able to clinch the deal and bring it out to bring it to its realization. The Pisrei Tshuva then quotes an Ateres Tzvi. Now, just a little historical background. Back in the day, say about 150 years ago and more, there was something called the Vad Arba Ratzos. There were four countries that had large Jewish religious populations, like Galicia, Poland, etc. They set up a committee that was a joint committee to decide halachic issues for all these four countries. They were like the legislative body, the Congress or the Senate, for those four countries. And they used to commit their decisions to writing, similar to what we have today in a court of law. And the Ateres Tzvi says that he found in the Pinkas, in the ledger of the Vad Arba Ratzos, and here he quotes it verbatim, Da Maskil Vehagomer Yachloku Beineim Beshove Vayemtsoi Lo Yikach Klum. That if there are three shadchanim, the first and the last will split the payment for shadchanis, the shadchanis geld, and the middleman gets absolutely nothing. But then he writes, Aval Ra'isi, even though that's what I saw in the Pinkos of the Vada Arba Rotzos, Ra'isi Shenogim, Shemachalkim Shlish, Lamaschil Shlish, Lamtsoi Vishlish, Lagomer. That they actually divide it up into three thirds, and each one collects a third. In the same tshuva, he has other diunim, other discussions there about one person who suggested the shidduch, but it was another shadchan who actually brought the shidduch to fruition. So matziah shidduch sheyotzei lapol b'sofel shel avadei shadchan acher, even though the first one introduced the shidduch, but the actual realization of the shidduch, to bringing it to its fruition, was implemented, was clinched by a second shadchan. Who gets the demei shadchanis, and do we divide amongst the two? For example, in our context, it's very common to have the following shaila: who gets shadchanis? The first shadchan suggested the shidduch, but for whatever reason, it was the second shadchan who actually took the chas and the kala step by step, by the hand, through, let's call it, the dating period, until finally they got engaged. And some have the minhag, I believe, I don't have this in the writings, that the first shadchan gets a third and the second shadchan gets two thirds. And the reason for that is because the second shadchan really carried this shidduch through with a great deal of work, because, you know, you're calling him and her, you want to go out of a second date, a third date, a fourth date, and they actually mentor the couple in a sense that, you know, she was questioning this, or you didn't, you know, you laughed too hard on the date, you know, so can you control yourself, you weren't as active on the date as you could have been, proactive, exciting, passionate, whatever it might be. They give little hints, and they serve almost like Aaron HaKohen to get two people together and bring about peace and harmony and bring this shidduch to fruition. That's a tremendous amount of work. And even if that shadchan, number two, was not the one who came out with the initial idea, that shadchan might indeed deserve more than the Beit Shadchanis than the first shadchan. And again, the assumption here is that there's a certain set price for shadchanis, and if there's more than one shadchanim, then that price still remains the ceiling. You don't have to. You don't have to pay double. You know, double pay for two shadchanim. In any event, there are various tshuva sfarim that we could look at when we have more time that really delve into all these dinim and these details. There's a sefer book called Pesachei Choshen. There's the Mishpatei Torah. There's the tshuva sfarim Haggis. For example, one of the issues that comes up, and this is based on the Ramah in Choshen Mishpat Siman Reish Samach Dalet Siv Zayin, is let's say you made a condition with the shadchan that he will be paid more than the going rate, and that becomes a complicated issue. Then, for example, he told the shadchan that he doesn't want to pay the shadchan. He told him up front, you know, he's not going to get paid. Is that a valid condition? Or is that kind of maslam ashkosa b'torah, and he has to pay whether he likes it or not? Then you have a situation of a shadchan who, in order to see this shidduch into fruition, he submits, he transmits false evidence, false statements, he fabricates all sorts of things in order to somehow get this shidduch on the ground and clinch it. And it's not clear, and that's the discussion in that sefer I mentioned, Mishpatei Torah, whether or not the shadchan in such a case has a right to demand tmei shadchanis, because his pu'ula was done in an illegal way. This is not the way the Torah understands what a shadchan is supposed to be doing. And even if at the end he somehow got the shidduch, you know, clinched the shidduch, then nevertheless he doesn't have rights to tmei shadchanis. In our day, we have issues like, for example, what happens if the shadchan demands an exorbitant amount of money, way above the going rate? We have issues about tmei shadchanis l'mashadech atzmo. You know, sometimes it's the chassan who suggested himself to the kala. You know, does he have rights to demei shadchanis from the parents of the kala, or vice versa? And all sorts of situations in which you can be potter from paying demei shadchanis. There's also an interesting pilpul here about Eliezer Eved Avram, whether he ever collected demei shadchanis, because he actually clinched the shidduch between Yitzhak and Rivka. If he wasn't paid demei shadchanis, why was he not paid? The obvious answer to the question why Eliezer was not paid is because he was the Eved of Avram. You know, he, whatever agreement or arrangement they had as, you know, payment of an Eved, that's all-inclusive. Why would Avram Avinu have to pay something that goes beyond the payment of an Eved? The payment of the Eved is all-inclusive, unless you want to say that, you know, Eliezer put himself out beyond the purview of the original contractual agreement of his Eved. Beyond that, it's a little bit unclear what happens if you do have to pay the Eved. If Eliezer did have to be paid, how do you actually implement that? Because the halacha is mashakana Eved kana rabba. And therefore, whatever payment Avram would have transferred over to Eliezer would have automatically accrued to Avram as the Adon of the Eved. In any event, I think we were successful to some extent in creating a framework and touching on some of the fundamental principles and the distinction between, as we said at the outset, between paying the Shabtanas of Poel or paying him under the Halach of Yored. But obviously there are many, many different issues, many great details that have to be ironed out in terms of how much Shabtanas you have to pay and when you have to pay and to whom you have to pay. These are all serious issues in Halacha with a vast amount of literature in the Tshuvas. As we said before, many, many Tshuvas, tens and tens of Tshuvas have been written on these issues, so it really needs a lot more study, but I just meant to accomplish the goal of setting up a framework and sort of enticing or arousing your curiosity about this topic and its many, complex manifestations. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you.